Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2008. Ruination, the early years.
Welcome back to Ruination, the early years. I'm King, and joining me as always is my expert guide to the glorious chaos of Big Fatty Online.
I'm Gail, and today we are diving into a truly, a really seismic week in BFO history.
We really are.
We're summarizing this huge transition period where Big Fatty, he goes completely solo, he leaves the fat cave, and he tries to keep up his daily podcasting ritual from, well, from the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, this is a deep dive into BFO episodes 22 through 25, which covers March 3rd to the 7th, 2008.
Right.
And the whole week is basically defined by the start of the Atlantis gay cruise. So our mission today is to really unpack how he managed to keep that, you know, that structural intimacy and community connection going while he's just surrounded by noise and cocktails and thousands of strangers.
It really is the ultimate stress test for his entire model. I mean, think about it. He's taking this super personal, deeply connected show.
A show where listeners know everything, like what he had for breakfast.
Or the status of his acne, literally. And he's just throwing it onto the high seas on the celebrity millennium. So the big question is, will that ritual, will it hold up against the reality of, you know, luxury group travel?
It's a huge question. But before we get on board that ship, we do have a mandatory and a joyful announcement to make.
We do.
We have to extend a huge congratulations to Brendan from the Yuck.
That's right. Brendan from the Yuck is the official winner of the very competitive Win Bacon's Money contest.
So great.
We love seeing the community get into these chaotic little events.
And we have to say the integrity of the contest remains absolutely pure.
Oh, of course.
We must note the winner was indeed chosen by the Mechanicals.
Yes, the Mechanicals. And for anyone who might be newer to the BFO lexicon, when he says the Mechanicals, he's talking about his automated systems.
I get set.
Exactly. Random number generators, computer algorithms, all of that. He loved emphasizing the technical process over any kind of, you know, human judgment.
Right, because it removed any possibility of bias.
Totally. Even for a fun little money contest, the technology decides. That was the whole point.
Precisely. So let's set the stage for the show itself. This week is the big one. It marks the formal split.
It does.
And BF, he confirms the rebranding right away. He says, it's not just ruined, it's me, Big Fatty Online.
And Larry, or Little Fatty, he's gone. BF says he's no longer doing it anymore. That's it.
So the fat cave is empty. The spotlight is 100% on Big Fatty.
And what's so fascinating is that even as he's introducing all this external chaos, the travel, the drinking, the noise of the cruise ship, he triples down on the internal structure of the show.
Right. The daily check-in, the specific segment.
The memory lane music, all of it. That becomes the anchor that kind of paradoxically allows for the extreme drunken intimacy we're about to get into.
Okay, let's get into that journey. It starts with the travel down there, and it immediately delivers some classic BFO humor.
The first thing we hear is just that definitive announcement. BFO is flying solo now. Big Fatty is totally in charge of the narrative.
And he jumps right in, detailing the flight to Fort Lauderdale. A part of the flight from Atlanta gets upgraded to business class for him and his friends.
And this leads to the first big aha moment of the trip. And it's one that says so much about, you know, the social gaps in his travel group.
It's a total fish out of water story.
It is. He talks about two of his horror friends. And for anyone who doesn't know, horror friends is his term for friends who are, you know, prone to chaos or just socially awkward in certain situations.
And they had never flown first class before.
Never. So when the flight attendant comes by to offer drinks, they order a Jack and Coke and a rum and Coke.
Standard enough.
But then they immediately reach for their wallets to pay. You can just feel that conditioned anxiety about the cost.
So BF has to step in.
Yeah, he has to patiently explain, you know, no, dear, when you fly first class, the beverages are included. They're free.
And the detail he repeats, the thing that really makes the joke land,
is the peanuts.
You could even have two bags of peanuts.
Two bags. That simple little thing, that was the definition of luxury for them. It's just a brilliant piece of commentary on, you know, what we perceive as luxury versus what it actually is.
That one small detail does all the work. It sets up that whole contrast for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
The excitement of this high-end vacation against these very grounded, kind of awkward moments of real surprise.
But, you know, the grounding reality of travel kicks in pretty fast.
Right. baggage claim.
A total nightmare. He said it took forever for the luggage to show up, and he actually used that delay to go and get the rental car,
which turned out to be an unexpected tourist SUV.
So the TS is already starting, and they haven't even checked into the hotel yet.
And speaking of checking in, this is where the audio documentation just takes off. He starts recording his first show from his pre-cruise stay in Fort Lauderdale.
Specifically from the In Leather guest house.
Which immediately raises the stakes.
Oh, completely. He's recording from his cabana room, and he's just giving this real-time, completely unfiltered, and deeply chaotic description of the view right outside his window.
He's turning, just sitting there and looking out the window into active BFO content.
Exactly. And the descriptions are so brutal and hilarious. He sees, quote, death.
And another piece of death with a huge stomach. He scares absolutely no one.
But then he moves on from the, let's say, less appealing sites to the immediate BFO-worthy ones.
The ones that deliver on the promise of the show.
Right. He spots a cute guy eating a banana and then a really hot guy in jeans and a wife beater. But the key detail, the thing that makes the audio so, you know, shocking for the time,
is that the first three men he mentions are all completely naked?
Yes. This is the core of why BFO works. He's promising you the unvarnished truth, and here he is, live, broadcasting his observations of naked men at his hotel. The immersion is total.
And his reaction is just as unfiltered.
He just admits it on air. He says the site had led him to be touching myself inappropriately.
I mean, in 2008, for a daily podcast to be that explicit about an immediate sexual reaction from wherever you happen to be, that was pushing some serious boundaries.
It proves to the listener that the show's ritual, which is total honesty, it transcends the location.
And the first night, it lived up to the atmosphere.
It did. At around 7:30 p.m., he recounts his first successful encounter of the trip.
He sets the scene for us.
Out by the hammock in the hot tub. He said he was being kind of squirrely, which is his term for, you know, being on the prowl.
Looking for trouble.
Exactly. And the connection was instant. A hot man came by, and BF confirms they were exactly each other's type.
And they had a very, very good time.
And the souvenir from this encounter is just fantastic.
Right, the cigar.
The man was a cigar smoker, so he gave Big Fatty one of his big fat cigars to smoke on the boat.
As nice memory of playing with him. It's like a physical trophy that connects the hookup to the ongoing story of the trip.
It's perfect. And then he brings it full circle with that classic self-deprecating humor. He immediately apologizes to the audience,
saying they might need to go clean up the vomit.
Right. That mechanism, you know, oversharing and then immediately critiquing himself for it. That's how he could push those boundaries without completely alienating his core audience.
So after the initial chaos and the hookups, the next day is a little more grounded.
For a little while, yeah. Saturday is all about pre-cruise retail therapy in Fort Lauderdale. Mundane errands, but, you know, BFO style errands.
The itinerary was very on brand.
Very. The Apple store, because of the whole iPhone obsession at the time.
Of course.
Then the Leatherworks store and a consignment shop called Out of the Closet.
Which he points out is the place to get cheap, slightly used leather stuff.
It's an itinerary basically designed to get him ready for all the theme nights on the cruise. He didn't find anything his size at the consignment shop, but he did make a pretty significant purchase at Leatherworks.
The fireman's pants?
A set of fireman's pants, yes. And he gets instant validation.
Oh, this is the best part.
The salesman who helped him try them on gives him this compliment that just immediately becomes part of the show's lore.
He tells him that the pants made Big Fatty look like he had a butt, even though you know Big Fatty doesn't have a butt.
I mean, that is just, that's the kind of specific personal validation that BF just lives for. It's tailoring magic.
It's perfect. Mm. So from retail therapy, we move to community engagement and a health update that really shows the extraordinary level of connection he has with his listeners.
Ah, yes. The return of the zit saga.
Legendary.
So the butt zit, which we've talked about before, is cleared up. But its spiritual legacy lives on through a listener named Kim Beaver.
So Kim Beaver developed a sympathy zit.
For the first time in 20 years. And it's under her beard. Which Big Fatty, of course, immediately clarifies is the beaver. He never misses a chance.
Okay, but we have to just stop and think about that for a second. A listener empathized so deeply with the host's physical problem
that they actually manifested a corresponding symptom. It's incredible. He calls it fabulous.
And he thanks her for caring enough to develop their own zit just to make Big Fatty not feel like a loner.
And this is where we should probably pause and just analyze that dynamic. It's funny. It shows commitment. But this story really highlights how blurred the lines were between his personal life and the audience's reality.
is it just brand commitment, or is it like a sign that the show is fostering this kind of unhealthy fusion between the host and the audience?
I think it's both, isn't it? It just proves that MeFO wasn't just a show. It was this shared emotional pathology almost.
The listeners aren't just consuming it. They're participating in its literal bodily function.
It's radical transparency leading to radical empathy, as weird as that is.
So shifting gears to the technical community, we hear from Ricky of the Foul Monkeys podcast.
Right, a voice letter. He calls from his iPhone to wish BF safe travels.
And this is a direct shot fired in the iPhone fever war that was happening in early podcasting.
Oh, absolutely. Ricky is subtly, or maybe not so subtly, bragging about his new tech while BF is still waiting for his.
And Big Fatty does not take it well.
Not at all. He immediately gives Ricky the finger on air. It's a nonverbal reaction, but it's very clear.
And it's because Ricky didn't participate in the, quote, surprise Big Fatty with a brand new iPhone when he returns from the cruise campaign.
The demand is crystal clear. I want an iPhone first.
This is where you see that playful but also kind of demanding persona come out. I mean, does that kind of behavior, demanding an expensive gift, does that undercut the intimacy? Or is it just part of the act?
I think the audience takes it as a joke, but it definitely shows his expectations for community action.
But then he pivots.
Immediately. He must recognize it was a bit much because he grounds the story right away with a little slice of Americana.
He confirms he'd started his day with a Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity at the IHOP.
Always back to food and normalcy after the chaos. It's his reset button.
We also get breaking news through an email from listener Kellen.
Yes, who warns him, don't tie that cock ring too tight. A subconscious fatty is a horrorless fatty.
Okay, this is fascinating. It proves the BFO vocabulary is completely internalized by the audience.
Totally. They're using his own terms, fatty and horror, to give him cautionary sexual advice.
We have to unpack that phrase, though. A subconscious fatty is a horrorless fatty.
What it means is, if Big Fatty is too distracted by physical discomfort, you know, the subconscious fatty,
he won't be able to provide the raw, honest, chaotic content that the listeners crave.
The horror, exactly. Yeah. The audience is basically jokingly telling him to prioritize the show's content over his own physical safety.
That's wild. And the segment wraps up with Memory Lane music.
The theme from Lost in Space. He links it back to the Florida location since Ricky and Herb are in Lakeland.
He names the stars, but says his favorite character was Dr. Smith.
Portrayed by Zachary Harris, yeah. And he admits the show was cheesy as they come.
It's a nice little nostalgic nod to his interests, you know, low-budget sci-fi, which you could argue is a lot like his own low-budget, high-intimacy show at the time.
That's a great point. So once he's actually on the ship, the reality of trying to maintain a daily ritual while traveling hits hard.
He has to manage expectations. He announces schedule disruptions pretty much right away.
He tells everyone there will be no show on Wednesday, March 5th. He just says it can't happen.
He also confirms he'll miss Monday, March 10th, since he won't be home until super late on Sunday. He's teaching the audience that chaos has, you know, logistical consequences.
But the most iconic segment from the ship has to be the drunken ship broadcast, BFO 24.
Recorded late from stateroom 8173.
This is where that commitment to structure just collides violently with the reality of being really, really intoxicated.
He opens the show with total transparency, which is always his saving grace. He just says, Big Fatty is drunk, so you can guarantee there's going to be a train wreck.
And you can hear it. The audio quality is rough. There's ship noise. You can hear his friend Larry Cly audibly crunching on nuts from the liquor package.
Pistachios, cashews, spicy peanuts.
It's a testament to his dedication that he even recorded at all. The day at sea had been packed. It ended with the dog tag tea dance from 5 to 7 p.m.
Where he admits he had quite a few beverages.
A few, yes. And he details the main entertainment from the cruise, drag bingo.
This part is fantastic.
So a drag queen gets the assistant cruise director, this guy Ian from Australia, to strip down to his underpants.
And BS description is, as always, very detailed.
He describes Ian as hot and hairy and notes that Ian openly discussed shaving his nuts during this whole impromptu striptease.
And the running gag was that Ian would pull out two bingo balls whenever someone yelled, "Show us your balls."
It's pure cruise ship spectacle, but it's filtered through BFO's commitment to sexual detail.
In that pee dance, that's where the infamous kilt incident happens.
Yes. He wore his kilt, and he notes that some of the other attendees were grabbing up under that kilt.
And instead of being outraged or uncomfortable,
he says he was enjoying every minute of it. He officially calls the event inappropriate touching a palooa.
This is a really crucial point. He's taking what could be seen as a boundary violation.
A pretty aggressive one, yeah.
And he reframes it as this celebratory, positive, mutually enjoyable thing that generates amazing content for the show.
He converts the chaos of the cruise into a narrative of shared fun. It completely validates the whole premise of the show.
The chaos wasn't just in the events either.
No, it's outside his stateroom. He hears homosexuals yelling on the veranda, and he just blames it on the complimentary cocktails from earlier. The whole ship is just this unconstrained, floating party.
He quickly runs through some logistics, too, confirming upcoming stops and the Lure of Leather event.
And he spots Miss Richfield, 1981, the drag queen host, and delivers this perfect piece of random observational comedy.
He says a guy getting his teeth whitened in the spa looked like he had Miss Richfield's mouth.
Even drunk, his eye for weird detail is just razor sharp.
And then, the mandatory lifeboat drill.
Drunk or not, he had to do it. He confirms he was assigned to lifeboat number 13, which he calls horrifying.
But he immediately pivots to vanity, telling listeners he looks fabulous in orange.
The listener voice letters from this episode are amazing because the audience is just totally willing to engage with him while he's impaired.
Bill in St. Louis calls to check on the weather.
And BF is slurring his response while watching CNN election returns. But he still makes a point to thank Bill for hoping people were touching Big Fatty inappropriately.
Then Bill calls back, maybe a little concerned about the show's quality, and critiques the memory lane music from a previous day.
Saying, Tim Cormel should not quit his day job.
And BF, even in a stupor, just affirms it. Everyone agrees.
And Nessa from San Diego calls, wishing him a good trip, but also asking for maybe not all the details.
To which he replies, with perfect irony, that she's probably getting more details than you want to know.
He's exceeding the contractual obligation of intimacy.
And the whole thing culminates with the Drunk Memory Lane music selection.
The theme from Father Knows Best.
And his explanation for this choice is just, it's perfect and it's profoundly dark.
He says, most people have, you know, had an incident with their father being drunk or something at some point. So I figured if Big Fight was going to be drunk, we might as well play Father Knows Best.
It's his way of saying this chaos is relatable. He frames his public intoxication as this shared universal experience.
And he closes with just a moment of pure, honest self-assessment. Be glad I can just fing talk. The structure held, even if the host barely did.
Okay, so now let's shift completely from the chaos of the ship to the intimate structure of the gays segment.
Right, BFO 23 features Kellen from Arlington, Texas. And these community interviews, they really are the bedrock of the show's success.
BF introduces him as a dedicated listener from the Little Fatty days. And he immediately starts teasing him.
The playful interrogator. He teases Kellen about being 19 and having no time to catch up on old episodes.
Which Kellen denies, saying he listened to all of them last night. The host-guest banter is there right from the start.
And Kellen gives this really rich snapshot of his life. He's 19, gay, working a ton, living with his partner Patrick, and he's technically in college.
And he gives BF some hope by saying he likes older, bearish men.
Just states it plainly. That's just what I like. No explanation needed. And BF loves this. He uses it as a moment of mutual validation.
Kellen then describes his hometown, Arlington, Texas.
He calls it Fun Central because of Six Flags and the new stadium, but then he immediately undercuts it.
Calls it a hick town, says it's run down.
And then gives the perfect BFO detail. They have two crack dealers who live next door. That juxtaposition between the American dream and gritty reality is just, it's core to the show's whole aesthetic.
He describes his private life, too. Says they're really boring, dinner, old TV shows, sex.
And BF expresses some mock concern about the lack of sex until Kellen confirms it is, in fact, happening.
They're also nerdy.
Yeah, they go clubbing, but Kellen also admits to being pretty weird and nerdy. He plays Pokemon. It's a great mix of party life and deep, relatable geekdom.
Which brings us to the core structure of this segment, the good gosh and gay moment.
Which Kellen just delivers flawlessly. The good is a potential work promotion.
But the gosh is where the depth comes in.
It really is. The promotion is taking way too long, almost 2 years. And because he's still a contractor, he has to pay around $3,000 in taxes every February.
That is a very specific, very adult, and deeply felt gosh.
It is, and it takes on even more meaning when he reveals his background a little later.
Right, but first, the gay moment.
Which is so beautifully mundane. He's reading the Golden Compass while running on a machine at the gym, and he just says, that feels gay to me.
It's that ritual of consumption. taking a piece of culture popular in the community and combining it with a self-improvement ritual of the gym, it grounds these big identity concepts in everyday stuff.
The interview ends with Kellen revealing his insane travel history. His family is an oil family.
So he's born in Denver, moved to Texas, then Perth, Australia.
Back to Texas, then Cairo, Egypt, back to Texas, and his parents are now in Calgary.
What a life for a 19-year-old.
I know. He's seen the Sydney Opera House in Uluru, and this is the key analysis point for me. Here's a 19-year-old who has lived this incredibly exotic, worldly life.
But his core, gosh, his big anxiety,
is the mundane financial stress of a $3,000 contractor tax bill. It just highlights that no matter where you go, universal adult stress will eventually find you and ground you. Big Fatty loves that kind of contrast.
So the second half of The Gaze is a two-part special with Andy Vera Charles.
AV from the Vera Speaks podcast. BF introduces him with just so much praise, calls him the Lushy.
AV is established as a 51-year-old actor in L.A., married 25 years. And he immediately sets the tone, joking that he's old and bitter and bonding with BF over being the same age.
And they just fall right into that universal old people conversation. They joke that before the call, AV had to pee and BF had to take a dump.
We've all had that conversation with a friend our age, right?
Oh, yeah. The body's breaking down and sharing bodily functions just becomes a source of morbid camaraderie. They joke about comparing medications next.
And they do. AV claims he only takes vodka.
And BF, of course, recounts his now famous colonoscopy story with Dr. Payne, where he asks, are you in?
But the absolute peak of this whole segment, the historical gold,
is the Charles Nelson Reilly connection.
Big Fatty is genuinely blown away to learn that AV was a dear friend and protege of CNR, who was BF's lifelong gay mentor.
This is a huge connection for BF. CNR was this icon of unapologetic, smart, gay humor in the mainstream.
And AV praises him so highly. Calls him his greatest teacher, the funniest human being he'd ever met.
The reverence is just palpable. And AV delivers this one core story that just cements the whole segment's legacy.
The story from his youth, when he was poor.
Lacking money for hair products, he used a mix of hot water and sugar as hairspray. It worked, but it left his hair sticky.
A gooey caramel apple head, as AV calls it.
So CNR runs into him at the very high-end Spago restaurant, goes to greet him, pats him on the head, and his hand gets stuck in the goo.
And this is where AV just nails CNR's perfect comedic timing.
CNR pauses, looks at him, and delivers the immortal line. Damn, I was going to run my fingers through your hair, but I'm a diabetic.
It's a structurally brilliant joke. It uses a personal truth, CNR's diabetes, to deliver this perfectly timed, character-defining line about AV's youthful embarrassment.
And AV confirms that CNR told that story to everyone, all the stars at Spago, for years. He turned AV's private embarrassment into a piece of shared celebrity mythology.
And that story, that is the entire thematic core of Big Fatty Online.
Exactly. BF takes his own embarrassing, chaotic moments, the butt zit, the drunken broadcast, the kilt incident, and he converts them into shared mythology that the listeners celebrate and internalize. AV's story shows BF exactly how his own life's work operates.
The interview wraps up because they're out of time. They joke about AV's insane podcast URL.
And AV gets the last dig in, noting that unlike BF, he is on iTunes.
That's CNR's story, though. That moment of laughter and connection.
Yeah.
It just grounds the whole week's chaos in this moment of pure, honest, emotional exchange. Yeah. Validates the entire premise of the show.
So if we look back at this incredible week, the key insight here is that structural paradox. Big Fatty deliberately threw himself into maximum volatility.
The content was so high velocity. The drunken broadcast, the inappropriate touching of Palua, the honesty from his guests.
But all of that chaos was stabilized by his unflinching commitment to the show's structure. The episodes still showed up. The segments were still there. The community was addressed.
That commitment to the ritual is what enabled the extreme intimacy. The audience knew when and how the chaos was coming, which made it feel safe.
And what we saw with that Charles Nelson Reilly anecdote is the creation of mythology. CNR turned AV's embarrassment into a beloved story. And Big Fatty is doing the exact same thing. He's turning the butt zit and the drunken broadcast into this shared, repeated mythology.
It's the performance of authenticity that makes his life eternal through his listeners.
It's making the private public and the awkward iconic, a genius storytelling strategy, whether it was intentional or not.
So we want to challenge you, the listener. We want you to think about that specific, profoundly awkward, or deeply embarrassing moment in your own life. You know, the thing you usually cringe about.
What is your personal sticky sugar hairspray moment?
How could you reframe that event not as a moment of shame, but as a story so potent, so hilarious, or so deeply personal that your friends would tell it on your behalf for the next decade.
That's the challenge that Big Fatty Online sets for all of us.
That is definitely something to mull over. And a reminder, next week Big Fatty is going to be dealing with the inevitable fallout from this cruise, the emotional and logistical residue.
And the reality of that potentially disastrous Mayan cave excursion we've talked about before.
You'll have to tune in next weekend to find out just how ruined that return trip really was. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. I'm King.
And I'm Gail. Tune in next weekend for the newest episode of Ruination, The Early Years. We'll see you then.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, The Early Years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.